The GAA Podcast on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.
Now, you're welcome back to studio. We have Mick Foley of the Sunday Times, author of The Bloodied Field, here as well to talk to us about the GAA Director General, Tom Ryan, his second report, Mick. And this is exciting stuff, you were saying.
It's cutting edge, Joe. It's cutting edge. For the first time, this is it. I'm holding it up. It's over 200 pages long. Do you want to have a hold of it?
Feel the weight.
How does that feel?
It feels significant.
It is. And, you know, God bless the fellow who had to proofread it and go over it and make sure everything was okay. What they did this year, and it's different to what they've done in the past, they basically did the Director General's report, the annual Croke Park finances, like the general GA, not the provincial finances, but what actually came in through Croke Park and out, and how they distributed the money. They did that, and plus Croke Park itself. So they put the three together, which is why it's such a weighty tome this time around.
And usually it would be separate.
They would be separate, yeah. Not sure why they put them all together. Could have been a scheduling thing. Having sat there, it was about an hour and, God, I think it was probably an hour and a half, an hour and 40 minutes. About halfway through, you just felt punched drunk with figures. Everything was up. Everything is awesome.
Yeah.
But I mean, everything is up, you know.
Does that tend to be the way? Is this generally an upbeat, everything is great report?
Well, in fairness, like, I mean, look, there would have been some periods where you wouldn't have been able to avoid the fact that things are in a downturn. And, you know, where costs have gone up, they've said it. But, you know, I mean, there are explainers as well as to why, for example, attendance gate figures have gone up. They upped the ticket price last year, so they would be open enough to say, well, that's partly the reason there. And also, we had an All-Ireland football final replay, which ups the thing by about 3 million straight away. But what I always find interesting, and a broader thing, is that when you look at the revenue, 49% of the revenue is still through the turnstiles, which I would say is probably unusual in sport. Amateur sport, not unusual, but when you look at it in the context of rugby football, you know, it's unusual that gate receipts would still take up so much of your income, that it's so important to you to get body through the turnstiles.
Quite quaint, really, of a bygone era.
Sure, it's lovely, isn't it?
So revenue, 118 million, that is the figure, 118 million last year, which is up 11% on the previous year. As you said, 49% of revenue is generated from gate receipts, 27% of revenue comes from commercial revenue. So in effect, they had a surplus of 12 million euros. So up 11%. Dublin Kerry brought in 3 million, as you said. The gate receipts alone, they were at 18 million for last year. They were 12 million the year before. So that is just ticket prices going up. Are they getting more bodies in?
It's hard to tell. They were asked about that. How can they differentiate between the impact of the ticket pricing and an increase in bodies going through the gates? They can't, really.
Okay.
So they're kind of satisfied enough to say it's a combination of both. They wouldn't be saying attendances are spiking. But again, I mean, when they went through the attendances, they were quite, you know, they were up. I mean, I think the average, if my memory serves me right, the average number for an inter-county championship game was 19,000, which sort of surprised me a little bit. I have to say, I thought it would be lower when you consider some of the crowds that might be at football games around the place. But I suppose it balance, you know, that's a very hard one as well. Like, I suppose when you're putting in a crowd at Croke Park compared to a crowd in a round three qualifier in the back end of Beyonds, you know, all into the one pot and trying to work out an average, it's not. It's like everything, I suppose, in the GAA. These figures are really interesting, and they portray a healthy organisation, which it is, in terms of its revenue and so on and so forth. But it's like everything in the GAA, you know, everything is localised and everything is particular. So I'm sure people could go in and go, well, they're spending that much on, you know, player welfare, they're spending that much on inter-county team costs, that's a big problem. The Cork situation with the stadium debt and the impact on other stadium developments, or particularly over the course of the next 2 years, is an issue as well. So while the top lines look good, you don't have to drill down too far to find little bits of issues that they need to keep an eye on and need to keep across. And in fairness, they made that point themselves, you know, they don't think they're in.
This isn't a propaganda exercise.
I never find it's a propaganda exercise. I mean, look, there's big slides and there's big arrows saying things are going up and things are good. But I think as well, I think a lot of the media who cover these things are at it a while. So, I mean, you know, you can tell them everything is great, but if it's not great, they'll be found out pretty fast, you know.
Spending caps for county preparation was brought up today. So the combined cost of preparing senior inter-county teams for the 32 counties came to 29.74 million. So let's call it 30 million. in 2019. So 30 million was spent across the board. Interestingly, that's an increase of 11%. That's a big increase.
That's big, yeah.
And they say this is a trend that simply cannot continue, and spending caps was maybe put forward as a potential solution. Now, they've talked at these report unveilings about stopping payments to managers for what feels like forever. So are we realistically, do you think, going to see spending caps? How serious were they? What was the vibe in the room on this?
I didn't get a sense that that was really a... Look, they have to say something. I mean, you can't just say this is unsustainable, full stop. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
You have to say something. But I think they know themselves. I mean, what do you do if you put a spending cap on? What do? You drive it underground. I mean, I saw some figures lately about team spending, and I was kind of looking at them going, I'd say there's a few more bob on top of that as well that you just don't hear about for whatever reason. So it's very, very difficult. I mean, as you mentioned, the payments to managers there, of course, the famous Peter Quinn line about when we went looking for the table, that the payments only couldn't even find the table. You know, so I mean, it hasn't changed over the years.
Yeah.
You still have this issue. What you want is strong governance, and that point is made in the report as well, that after all the, you know, rules about spending caps, etc., as Tom Ryan's own words, the GAA's record in imposing rules of that nature is mixed, which I think is a euphemism for, you know, chronically bad. I mean, we just don't respond. The GAA don't respond very well to being told you can only spend so much. What you need is strong governance, county board level, county chairmen, county secretaries. And there are places where there is very good governance in place, but there are other places where there's not. And when you're dealing with so many different, again, so many different localised issues in different places, teams that, you know, might have no hope of winning in All-Ireland and are happy enough to control their spending and whatever. And then you have other crowds that really want to win in All-Ireland. We go all out 1 year, you know?
Yeah.
And that blows it. So, like, it's very, very difficult.
Very difficult. There will definitely be an attitude in many counties of, okay, they've brought in a spending cap. How can we beat the system?
Ah, yeah.
What businessman can come in and give us a nod and a wink and put us up in Portugal?
Sure, look, it's the natural reaction to most GAA rule changes. I mean, whether we agree with the advanced mark or not, for example, one of the first reactions was, right, how can we screw this, like, you know, rather than just kind of taking it on its merits.
How can we take the spirit of the law and crush it?
And destroy it, you know, for all eternity. So it's like the same kind of mentality, unfortunately, prevails in the GAA, and it's the same mentality. There's a motion going forward to Congress around sort of limiting the amount of guys that can go on the field and wear fornia and stuff, and maybe ruling it out entirely. Mm. That's sort of part of the same problem, like, that you can't even have a rule where someone goes on, you can't even have a runner, you know,
who doesn't catch a slitter.
Yeah, who doesn't catch a slitter or get involved with somebody, you know. So it's that, I don't know, it's that mentality that's there for so long.
I'd be interested to see if this blows up and becomes a big issue. So for the first time, they revealed the salaries paid to senior management at the association. Tom Ryan said of this, by the way, this is in excess of what we are required to provide in terms of accounting standards and in terms of the law, but we have expanded on our disclosure this year. So they weren't required to put this forward, they decided to do that. So 14 members of the senior executive, the salaries are not declared for individuals, but the median salary of the 14 is about 125,000 per annum, which is a very healthy salary.
Very nice.
Will they get flak for this, or will there be an understanding that we're talking about revenues of 120 million? I mean, we've seen that great people don't always run every sporting organisation in this country. Will there be, I was going to say maturity, maybe that's unfair against people who might have a problem with it. Is there maybe an understanding that if you want high calibre people to work for the GAA as opposed to other organisations, you may have to pay them a very, very good salary? Or will this kind of be a hang on here, lads?
I would expect that there'll be no understanding whatsoever. If previous experience is anything to go by, people will be looking at it and go, oh, for God's sake. I'm intrigued why they put the figures out, to be honest.
It would seem it's just giving people a rod to beat them with.
It doesn't, on the face of it. Now, it didn't come up in the question and answer session afterwards. And like a lot of things in this report, a lot of stuff will become part of the conversation over the next bunch of weeks and months.
This struck me as a taxing shoes in the budget kind of one. This could catch up on them.
It's an unusual one. I mean, traditionally, we'd say for the GAA president, for example, it used to be that if whatever role the GAA president had in his professional life previous to becoming president, he basically, that salary jumped across, so he wasn't losing out, you know. I'm not sure whether that's still the case or not. I mean, you're looking across the board then. I mean, you are looking at very high parts. I mean, Croke Park, for example, the Croke Park end of the business had an unbelievable year. serious increase in the money they're bringing in. So, you know, obviously the people who are involved there are doing a pretty bang up job on that side of things. Is you know, again, as you said, we can't individualize this, but are the people in the higher positions worth that kind of money? I would imagine you'll find plenty of people who feel that there's a disconnect between the grassroots and the top, actually feel it's amplified by the sharing of those sort of figures and the conversations that'll probably erupt around those things when they become sort of more known, you know?
Yeah, no, I think it will
it's
be
an unusual one.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. When it's an amateur organisation.
As you say, and they're not obliged to share that sort of stuff, you know? It was very, very unusual. Like, I mean, even going back, even around media deals and stuff, they wouldn't share those kind of details. When it came to Clonliffe College today, which they're in the process of buying, they couldn't give the total figure because there's a non-disclosure agreement in place at the minute. Mm. So, you know, there's a lot of other figures that they have to be very cautious around. And this is one that I can't remember anyone really asking any questions previously about, well, how much are you guys on, you know?
Yeah, okay. Well, 125,000 per annum is the median across the 14 members of the management, the senior executive at Croke Park. Porky Queeve then came up. We have a clip here. John Duggan has done a 15-20 minute interview with Tom Ryan, which you can get on offtheball.com. We'll put the podcast up as well, the video up as well. So Porky Queeve came up. Obviously, Porky Queeve has been mired in controversy over the last while. Originally, this was meant to cost 78 million. It now seems it will ultimately cost 96 million, which is a hell of a difference. So there are bank borrowings of 21 million, and then there's another 10 million owed to Croke Park. So Tom Ryan was asked about this situation, what the final costs are likely to be.
Porky Queeve, that was in your report today. What are the lessons that can be learned from Porky Queeve and the development of it, redevelopment of it with the 20 million debt?
Well, the first one I mentioned it a minute ago, just the sheer scale of projects that we have to undertake now. So the next two or three projects that we undertake, we'll have to be just very, very conscious that we deliver them on time and that we deliver them on budget and so on. The one thing, I mean, I mentioned Porky Queeve in my report today, just in the spirit of setting out definitively what the overall picture is, because it's kind of fragmented through various sets of accounts around the association. So I just wanted to take the opportunity to set it out definitively. And I don't mean to do that in a negative context, because it's the biggest and best development project that we've undertaken in the association for the last 30, 40 years, and it will be an asset for Cork, GA, and for all of us for the next 30 or 40 years. So it's a place to be hugely proud of. The challenges that are ahead, to be fair about it, they're not much different from the challenges that would apply to any county ground, except they're on a slightly larger scale. I mean, in general, we don't anywhere build a county ground or a stadium that doesn't have debt associated with it, John. That, unfortunately, that's the reality. That applies everywhere. There is going to be a challenge ahead with financing and funding the debt on the stadium, but Cork is a serious GAA county, and I have no doubt in the world that they'll be able to do that.
So you don't see it as a white elephant with maybe the lack of high-profile games there on a regular basis throughout the year?
As I said, that will be there, that stadium will be there, and there'll be patrons walking through the turnstiles at Porky Queeve and impressed by that facility for the next 30, 40 years. Absolutely not a white elephant, absolutely not.
Tom Ryan there, GAA Director General. We're here with Mick Foley in studio. I mean, the issue was never that Cork did not need a fine stadium or that Porky Queeve didn't need redevelopment. The issue was that we went from 78 million to 96 million for a start.
Yeah. And if people might remember, there was one point where the price of the cost was put at 110 million, which didn't go down very well either in Cork or in Croke Park when that particular one was revealed. So it's landed at 96 million. I think it was probably, talking to people that are involved in it, it was the figure that they were kind of expecting something in and around that. The debt is now 30 million, which interestingly enough, there's a delegate to the Cork County Board, John O'Flynn is his name, and he's followed this fairly assiduously all the way through. And he, at a county board meeting quite recently, I think it was before Christmas, he actually predicted 30 million. So as in the clip there, it's 20 odd million to the bank and it's 10 million to Croke Park. There's a hope from the GAA perspective, and particularly from the Cork perspective, that the sale of some land and some other bits and pieces will yield 10 million this year. But as far as my understanding is that there's no sign of that deal being done anytime soon. It's February, maybe it'll be done by the end of the year. It's going to be a pretty important tranche, that 10 million, in terms of trying to lessen this debt. But I mean, the Porky Queeve thing itself is such a multifaceted issue. It goes beyond the debt that's inflicted on Cork GAA. I think this is going to have ramifications for counties and for the GAA for a long, long time to come.
To ask a simple question, do we actually know what happened with Porky Creef?
Not really. I don't.
And I'm sure you've heard plenty of rumour.
Oh, listen, I could sit here all day, but we can't do that. All we know is that what always baffled me about it was the degree to which Cork were allowed to do their own thing. What you would have found within Cork itself, talking to people that were close enough to the scene, was that there was a lack of transparency during the process.
Which has continued if we still don't know what happened.
People would have felt that there was a lack of transparency, but yet they were allowed to continue unhindered. At the moment, there's a lot of flack being directed towards the Cork County Board, and rightly so. They bear the brunt of the responsibility for this. But I think there is a degree of responsibility with Croke Park as well. They talk now about the lessons we're going to learn from Porky Creef in relation to future projects, that we need to be more on top of them, that we need to, basically account for every penny, make sure everything is planned, there's contingency and all the rest of it. Well, where was all that 10 years ago?
It's not the most groundbreaking lesson to have learned, is it?
And the worst of all is, it's not the first time that Porky Creef has nearly driven Cork GAA to insolvency. The first time in the mid-70s when Cork was redeveloped, it was a near catastrophe for Cork GAA. It nearly ran the entire business out of commission. And the exact same thing has happened again. So this idea that we trust Cork because Cork's a great GAA county and Cork will fix it, rubbish. Cork is the same as any other county. When you come to these massive capital projects, they were like the people that were involved in putting Porky Creef together and putting the money together and putting the budget and actually delivering on it, hopelessly out of their depth, clearly. Mm. Clearly hopelessly out of their depth, and left, and no one stepped in at any point to say, hang on a minute, you're making an absolute bags of this. Mm. You're actually threatening the future of Cork GAA, not at inter-county level, but actually at the lower levels now. You know, Cork's a great GAA county. Cork won't be a great GAA county for long if this sort of mismanagement is allowed to continue. And the issue now is, of course, that Cork County Board, the executive has turned over, it's changed, but the crowd that are in there now are dealing with the legacy issues of the past, and the legacy issues of the past are not going to go away for a long, long, long time.
Is there any report being undertaken as to what went on? Because capital grants were involved here, state money was involved here. Will we ever get a clear, definitive answer?
I think from the Cork, my understanding of it is from the Cork GAA perspective, they're so mired in the weeds right now that they can't see the wood for the, can't see the wood for the trees. Pick your analogy. They just can't, they don't have the space, I'd say, to even consider these things.
For example, the GAA aren't leading some kind of report. Let's get in here and find out what happened.
There was a question asked this morning about culpability, or related to culpability. I'm paraphrasing the question, but the essential question was, is anybody going to be held to account for this? And the reply was, and again, I'm paraphrasing,
sure,
this is a collective issue. We're not going to be putting heads on plates, basically. Now, I would say that there is plenty of room for heads on plates here. Mm. You know, when we actually drill into the detail of this, there is plenty of room for heads on plates and how this was allowed to happen, how this mismanagement was allowed to occur, and how people who were involved in that mismanagement were allowed to stay in their positions for so long without at least being pulled aside and asked, what in the name of sweet Jesus are you doing? Mm. And how is this occurring? And also that lack of transparency, as I said. Like people that were very close to this. I remember asking people during this thing, like, how's it going? Like, we don't know. We actually don't. How much is it costing? We don't know. No one's telling us anything. We don't know. So, like, there was a thing last week, a very small little thing last week. It's very small in the context of 96 million. But Cork County Board got notice a few weeks back that they owed 1.2 million euros to the GAA, to Central Council, backdated to 2017. Don't know what that 1.2 million amounts to, but it was basically money that they owed that was kind of basically, they wanted to divert it into the stadium. So the agreement was, you can divert that 1.2 million into the stadium, and when the stadium is up and running, you can pay us back. Mm-hmm. Right? Now, obviously, the stadium isn't going to be making a bean for a long time. So this figure was put to the to Cork County Board recently. My understanding is they had no knowledge of it. They didn't even know it existed. They come to the County Board meeting last week. They make this known. And my question is, what is the value for Croke Park in putting this 1.2 million in front of them and saying, you need to pay this, like, now, right? I understand, of course, they have to pay their debts, but this is a case where this 1.2 million was agreed that it would come out of the stadium when the stadium started making a few quid. And this is the pinch point, like, people talk about, and the GAA again spoke today about this Páirc Uí Chaoimh debt being separate to Cork GAA, and that the twain would not cross over, and that the money being spent on Páirc Uí Chaoimh wouldn't affect the running of Cork GAA. But here's a classic example, you know, and this is where the problems are going to arise as they go on. People down there are very concerned about club levies. They're concerned how this debt is going to be paid off without it impacting on Cork GAA. It seems impossible.
Well, two things jump to mind then. So one, when they approach Croke Park or the GAA and say, can we have that 1.2 million and put it into the stadium? Maybe that's a moment where somebody in Croke Park says, okay, let's just have a little, come up and have a chat about what's going on, because 1.2 million isn't pocket change. And secondly, when Tom Ryan there says in that piece with John Duggan that repayment of the 10 million to Croke Park and the 20 million in bank debt, that will be a challenge. That's a hell of a euphemism. And that's what you're getting at when you talk about levies and how it will affect Cork GAA on the ground.
There's a reality here. And like, it's fine to say, and it is a good thing for Cork GAA. It's not complicated to explain, but it can get a bit complex, I suppose. Like, Páirc Uí Chaoimh is treated as a separate business, effectively. There's a board that run Páirc Uí Chaoimh. So the Páirc Uí Chaoimh debt will be pushed over there. It's taken off the Cork GAA books, effectively.
Okay.
Right, so...
So the Cork County Board, as they outline the GAA year ahead, they don't have to worry about the Páirc Uí Chaoimh debt, is the theory.
They just worry about the day-to-day. But the problem there is that effectively means that Cork GAA don't really have a say. Well, they have a say, but they don't have a controlling say in what happens to Páirc Uí Chaoimh in terms of its financial future. The board that's there, it's not dominated by Cork County Board people, so they don't even have a voting majority on that board. So it's effectively been removed from their books, which is a good thing. It gives them room to breathe. But the reality here is that unless, like, they have new financial frameworks and they have new plans to kind of service the debt, but like, that overriding sense among the public, and particularly GAA club members down there, that at some point they're the ones that are going to end up paying for a chunk of this. Like, also even stuff like Cairde Corkaigh, which is their fundraising arm. My understanding again is that Cork are finding it really, really difficult to explain to potential donors abroad that the money that they donate will not be going into this black hole of Páirc Uí Chaoimh, which it wouldn't be, in fairness, but it's very, very hard to get that across when all you hear is debt and loss and these huge figures and, you know, where's it all going? You know?
Yeah, okay. To rush through some of the other headline news, Casement Park, they intend on going ahead with that, although, interestingly, the Northern Ireland Executive budget approval dates from 2011, so there's talk of additional funding being needed either from Westminster or raised privately. Camogie and Ladies Football Association's Tom Ryan says, at this stage, I think we all agree that our eventual goal is not amalgamation or takeover, but certainly to come together. We're seeing double headers increased cooperation. No timeline putting that, is there?
No, not that I know of. Okay. The Casement Park thing is interesting, actually. And this is going to be a legacy of the Páirc Uí Chaoimh experience. They've said that they're going to put X amount into Casement Park, but that's, as you say, is a 2011 figure. As it stands now, Tom Ryan said, we're not putting another penny in. That's another legacy issue there. And again, you know, they're not going to be investing in Casement Park, even though it's clearly going to cost more than what it would have cost in 2011.
Okay. So, Congress will unveil the new cup name for the winners of the Tier 2 Football Championship. Any early...
Still holding out hope, Joe. The Molloy Cup's got to be...
Well, listen, it's not for me to say.
Maybe that's the name of the new Pro 14 trophy, I suppose.
Career
change.
Any early favourites in that?
Not that I'm aware of. I've heard bits and pieces, but nothing. They said they'd have it by Congress, which is the end of February, last weekend in February, so we won't have long to wait.
Okay. And Peter McKenna, who's the Croke Park Stadium Commercial Director and GAA Commercial Director, the 2020 accounts will be down in 2019, partly due to the fact that there are no concerts currently booked for Croke Park. It would seem that Euro 2020 finals have impacted major acts touring Europe. Just they flagged that. Before you go, by the way, the political winds of change sweeping through the country. Clare Champion, I read from here, Clare County Councillors. Motion 31 on the agenda for the next time Clare County Councillors sit down We are calling on the Minister for Communication and Finance to request RTE reinstate Joe Brolly to his position on the current panel ASAP. Joe has provided in-depth analysis of football for many years. His removal from the panel has taken away from the enjoyment of the game for so many people to watch our games on the national station. By the way, Motion 32 I read is how to promote Shannon Airport better. They may not get to that.
I think
Shannon Airport, I mean, you may have to wait.
I mean, Shannon Airport will be kind of, I think they'll be trying to get to Motion 29 if they can. That's going to take over. That's going to become a movement, you know.
Listen, if there are not at least 10 GAA journalists down at that council meeting, you lads don't know what a story
it'll be like
is.
It'll Colin Lynch back in the day, you know. All done waiting for the white smoke. What's going to happen?
Oh dear. Mick Foley of the Sunday Times, I'm sure you're covering this and more at the weekend in the Sunday Times. We'll be reviewing it on the Sunday papers. Thanks a million, Mick.
Cool, no bother.
The GAA Podcast on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.